life. What if there's more to it? And tonight, life to the full. How can I get the most out of life? Tomorrow night, the origin of life. What if there's more to life than just life, if there is a creator? But that's for tomorrow, for tonight. For tonight, we're going to be talking to Mark and Camilla, and Mark Doring and Camilla Doring. It's lovely to have you with us. I'm going to ask you to come and join me. We're going to sit down. Thank you so much for being prepared to be interviewed. Mark and Camilla have three children, 16, 13, and 10. I think, yes, that's just right. Why don't you sit there? And both of them have been involved in the city. So Mark was a partner at London Overy, and Camilla was at Linklaters here in the city. And thank you again for being prepared to be interviewed like this. It's very, very good of you. Our subject this evening is life to the full. How can I get the most out of it? And I've chosen you to talk to because I think you really have lived life to the full. Just tell us a little bit about kind of, you know, life to the full for you.
Well, I suppose when I came to the city back in the early mid-90s, I was a lawyer. I joined a city law firm, Sims & Sims, originally, and then later on went to Allen Overy. And so I loved being a litigator. I was a patent litigator. And I loved going to court, the drama of court, the intensity of court. The Americans had arrived in the law world into London, and the American law firms had come, and you know, salaries were increasing for the English lawyers as well as it was more competition. And it was a real work hard, play hard sort of culture. And I loved all that. I loved it. We used to, me and my colleagues used to work late most nights. I used to eat all my weekday evening meals in the staff canteen. But it was, you know, great camaraderie, taxis late home at night, occasional all-nighter, once a double all-nighter.
When you did your first all-night stint, I mean, did you get home thinking, oh, I've chosen the wrong job? I mean, how was it?
Maybe I've got slightly rose-tinted glasses now because I don't have to do it anymore, but I think it was a badge of honor. There was a sort of badge of honor about it. And, you know, it was something you could come in and tell everybody. And, you know, Mark, he did it all night last night. And, you know, you'd, you know, it was great. And, you know, and there was that sort of, you'd go out to the pub when you could. I mean, we worked pretty hard. But, you know, if you get out to the pub and have a good time and, drink and make merry, that was me. It's a full, by the end of my 20s and early 30s, I got my first flat and a sports car.
What kind of car did you have?
Oh, no, you shouldn't have asked me that. Just leave it as a sports car.
Okay, fair enough.
Sounds good, doesn't it?
Just, you spent time in abroad as well?
I went to Hong Kong, yes. And that was the epitome, I think, of working hard and playing hard. Mm-hmm. So the same firm and to our office there. And that was just, that really was where you sort of would jump in the taxi late at night, maybe 10 o'clock and go and play tennis under the floodlights at your sports club and, have a couple of beers and then, some would even go back and do, just also that sort of atmosphere.
Great. And Camilla, for you, life to the full, you were going to talk to us a little bit about university and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think for me, it was a lot about achievement and doing well at things. Mm. That was living life to the full. So I think way back at school, I'm afraid to say I was the pupil who had her essays read out in class for everyone else to copy.
You've just been booed.
It's fair enough. I was very sort of determined and self-driven, and I think that led me then to getting a place at Jesus College, Oxford. That was a great place to be. It felt like the best place to be at that sort of age. That was where it was all happening. And then after that, on to law school. And then, as you mentioned, working in the city and the excitement of being in the city as a trainee solicitor and enjoying life here.
And you were also in legal recruitment, weren't you, for a while?
I actually was a failed lawyer. I gave up after 4 years. No dizzy heights of partnership for me. Then I did legal recruitment. Yeah, Mark actually came, when we met, his chat-up line was, after we met at our church, and he the next morning he emailed me and said he wanted some advice about moving law firms, and could I?
That.
I think so
that was our first date.
That's cheap. I was going to say that's cheap. You know, that is that.
Transparent, I think.
Camilla, what attracted you to the law? What did you read at university, by the way?
Yeah, so law.
And what attracted you to?
Well, it was quite mundane, actually. My parents just said, why don't you do something vocational? And I could see that there was quite a straight path through to working in a city law firm doing law. So, yeah, it wasn't really any more profound than that, I'm afraid.
Well, that's fine. Mark, you did sciences, didn't you, at university? Molecular biology?
Yeah, biotechnology in the end, molecular biology. I loved science at school, and I was applying to do medicine to go to university, and then I didn't do so well in one of my chemistry A-level and didn't quite get the right grade, and so it was a question of taking it again and going to do medicine or go off and do another bioscience. I thought, let's just go and do another bioscience, it's great. And I loved all that, and actually it was the sort of... I was going to probably just carry on and do a PhD, but it brought me around to law because my tutor at the time, he'd met up with some hotshot lawyers from London and had been advising him on a patent case, and I think he'd become an expert witness, but he certainly had been advising them, and he sort of said to me, "Do you know, these lawyers, they don't know much about the science, actually. You know, it's quite a good thing to get into, probably, that." And I thought, you know, oh, yes, that's a good idea. So that's what I did, and I went then did the conversion course and became a lawyer and went and to do patent litigation. That's what I did.
And intellectual property and that sort of thing?
Well, intellectual property is patent litigation is part of intellectual property,
right,
and right. And patents is on scientific topics, inventions. And so I was very much on the life sciences side and pharmaceuticals and litigating for drug companies.
Fascinating. I'd love to ask you about science and your Christian faith, but that's tomorrow night, so we're going to have to park that. Okay. and talk about it. Just tell me how did it feel, you know, when you got made partner? Because I know, you know, the people in the law and these big law firms, you know, they strive to be partner together. How was it? What did it feel like?
Yeah, I mean, it was terrific, actually. I mean, it was a real acknowledgement, I guess. You know, you had all the partners sending you emails or writing you notes and saying, you know, welcome to the club, and it was terrific. And, you know, you went to go to the partners' dining room, you know, the hallowed turf, as it were, and inside, what was in there? Oh, my goodness, you know. And, in fact, I just missed out on the really good old days where you're given the silver napkin ring for your place setting with your initials on it. And, you know, you used to get the headed notepaper. We used to have partners' names on top of the notepaper, and they would give you 100 sheets with your name. Now, dear mum, arrow, you know, that's the thing, you know.
Were you given one of those, you know, very expensive pens?
No, I wasn't, actually. Although
you missed out on everything.
No, I wasn't, actually. In fact, we were offered expensive pens, and there's a long story, but we turned them down, actually. But anyway, yes.
Fair enough. So, now, Mark, at some stage along the track, you decided to... You didn't grow up in a Christian home. You wouldn't have called yourself Christian. Just talk us through, in this whole kind of journey, what made you... decided to consider the Christian
faith. Well, I'm shaking my head, not growing up a Christian home. My parents divorced. My mother is a Christian, but I went to a boarding school from a very early age, from about 8. And so we had a lot of Christian input at school, actually. It was a Methodist school. But I did everything I could to avoid chapel and all that sort of thing. And in fact, I was confirmed. You know, it's a little story that my best friend, he said to me, "Yeah, I'm going to go to the confirmation classes. Do you fancy coming? You know, you get an early lunch ticket." And I thought, and you know, I think I might get a gold watch if I get confirmed. I thought, maybe I'll get a gold watch too. Anyway, I went off and became confirmed, and my mother gave me a Bible, very sensibly. But Christianity meant nothing to me as a child, and through university and law school, and indeed into the city. So for a number of years, it just was, you know, I knew about Jesus Christ, but it was irrelevant to me. And it was not until actually I went to Hong Kong as a trainee, and I met this, we shared a flat with this guy, and he also wasn't a Christian, but we had a terrific time, really good friends. And then when we came back to London, within about a year or so, he became a Christian. In fact, he was baptized here, you know, in the late 90s.
That's where we first met.
That's right, that's where we first met. And, you know, I came in and I with a number of friends, and I saw this friend getting baptized, and, you know, I just thought, oh, you know, what's going on? He's gone completely mad. You know, this is an incredibly intelligent guy, you know, first natural sciences. And anyway, it started a conversation, and it kept going for a number of years, 3 or 4 years, maybe more. And I just kept thinking, well, what's it all about? I went off to a secondment to another law firm in Germany, actually. And I tell you that because, strangely, I had a lot more time there to think. I was out of the city for a few months and do plenty of other things, play sport and things, as well as work. And one day, a rather sort of fearsome, middle-aged secretary came in to see me, a German woman, and thrust the New Testament in German into my hands and said, I think you ought to read this. I was like, you know, crumbs, you know, what have I done? You know, had she seen me dancing on the tables at the Oktoberfest? I don't know what was going on. Anyway, it made me think, when I come back to London, I'm just going to look into this Christianity thing properly. And so I came back and I phoned up my friend and said, you know, Bruce, I'm just thinking about, because I come to church with you on Sunday. And he, you know, as he tells it, you know, just fell off his chair. He thought, you're the last person that I thought was going to ask, you know, ask me that. Anyway, it started me going on to church the autumn and winter of 2002. And, you know, the people I met at church, there was something about them. There was something about their sincerity, their kindness. There was, and I heard the sermons being given, the talks being given. There was just something about the words that was being preached, which I just loved and wanted, but it just didn't make quite sense. And anyway, it got to the new year, and I thought, well, do you know, I don't know about this. But there was a Christianity Explored course going on, and I thought to myself, well, I'm going to go on this course, and if at the end of this it still doesn't make sense to me, then, you know, I'm out. I've done my investigation. And I started going along through the new year of 2003, and it was during that course that I just sort of met Jesus. We went through a gospel and the life and the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, and just to really look at who this person is, you know, what he's come to do, you know, all about it, ask all the questions. And it was suddenly that time when I sort of left about three quarters of the way through, I remember walking outside the pub and thinking, you know, Lord, I know you resist. Just tell me what you want to do. You know, I just want to, you know, follow you. And it was that moment. That's when I became Christian. And
Oh, thanks, Mark. Yeah. Thanks for being so open about it. We'll come back and ask you some more details in a moment. But Camilla, you had similar sort of experience, but much younger, and when you were at university. So tell us what led you to start investigating the claims of Jesus.
Yes, that's right. It was at university. And so I think, you know, I had a great time at university, first year at university. There was lots going on, rowing, university netball, drama, nights out down the college bar. But I just had this niggling question, is this it? Is there more to life than this? It didn't quite satisfy somehow. And also, wonderfully, there were a number of lovely friends that I made who were Christians at my college. And they were still fun, and they still, you know, they'd go down to the college bar as well. You know, they weren't sitting in their rooms. But they had this love of Jesus Christ. And so that sort of provoked me to look into the Christian faith. Similar to Mark, I went along to a Christianity Explore course at a local church in Oxford. Asked lots of really awkward questions, anything I could think of to throw them off. But amazingly, sort of got brought to that point where I felt like every question I had was answered. Similar to Mark, you know, we were going through a gospel, looking at the life of Jesus, who was he, why did he come? And I just came to that point where I realized that I had lived ignoring God, and I'd gone my own way, and I realized I understood who Jesus was and why he'd come, that he was God's son, that he'd come to sort out the punishment that my turning away from God deserved. And so once I realised that, I think sort of lifestyle-wise, I was like, oh, do I want to become a Christian? What's that going to mean for how I'm living my life at university? But in the end, I thought, well, if this is true, I can't let that be the reason for me not to become a Christian.
Was it quite evidential, or would you say, your approach?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yes. Don't ask me everything now. I mean, I won't just give you all the answers, but... definitely, you know, I think it is putting the different pieces together. But I think some of the things that convinced me were, first of all, can I rely on this book of the Bible that we're looking at? And so I think the sort of historicity of the Gospels and the fact that they were written within a generation of Jesus being around, and therefore there were eyewitnesses who could have said, no, hang on, this is all a load of rubbish. When they were written, and other things, I think, like, you know, how sort of the resurrection and when Jesus died and rose again, and then how his followers behaved, you know, that they went out and they were prepared to lose their lives to tell people about Jesus and the gospel. And why would you do that if you knew it was all a lie and he was just an ordinary man.
Can I ask
you? So it's that sort of thing, but it was sort of building blocks, putting all these different things together and thinking, yeah.
You've both talked about Christianity Explored and reading Mark's gospel, his account of Jesus's life. I mean, what particularly attracted you to Jesus Christ, do you think, as you came to face-to-face with him, as it were, in Mark's gospel? Can you pinpoint anything, or is it slightly more general?
Well, I think for me it's more about what is the truth. So, you know, he is an attractive figure as you look at him in terms of how he behaves towards people and perhaps the moral framework that he says in terms of how people should live. But I think for me it came down to, you know, who do I think he is? Do I think he is the Son of God? Do I think he came to die on the cross for me, is that true or not? So yes, it obviously is influential as to whether you know, what do you think of him as a person and how he behaves. But in the end, for me, it came back down to, is this true? Is this what happened? Is this who he is? And saying yes or no to that, if that makes sense.
No, that's terrific. Thank you, Camilla. I just want to ask you one, and we'll come back and chat to you in a second, Mark. But just one other thing. I mean, having reflected then on life, you know, those university years and so forth, without knowing Jesus, as you look back on it, what are your reflections now from a Christian perspective?
Yeah. Well, I think other people looking in at me might have thought that I was living life to the full and I was enjoying some of the good things, you know, that the life has got to offer. But actually, I wasn't, you know, I was living a life without God. And I didn't really have any answers to the questions, the big questions of life. What is life all about? Why are we here? What's going to happen when I die? So I was just kind of finding my own way rather than really having an understanding of what life's all about and why we're here.
That's really helpful. And what about you, Mark? As you look back on, you know, those years as a partner,
right.
Having achieved many people.
I became a Christian at sort of 32 or so, and I look back on those years before becoming a Christian as, well, there's a couple of things, I think. One, there's a certain amount of real shame, actually, and embarrassment, how I treated others, but how I treated God, just sort of with real... Just, I'm really humiliated to think how I rejected God all that time, and you know, I wanted all the things that God gives us in life, but I didn't want to know Him at all and reject Him. I think directly to sort of living in the city and you know, my career and so forth up until that stage. Do you know, I realized just how ensnared I was to sort of living for my career and for money and the status. And, you know, I mean, in some respects, that went on for a little bit longer as I realized I just was set free from that. As my heart went from, you know, loving all those things and just set upon those things and being set upon Jesus and realizing that I could live my life for Him, with Him as, you know, my who to worship, my direction. Then suddenly I was freed again. I just, you know, I felt I'd become sort of, in that sense, that was then now living life to the full. I could actually be who I realized I was meant to be. Somebody was free of all those living in a sinful way of just and rejecting God, but free to worship him, live for him, follow him. I was still a lawyer, and I had to keep on doing some long hours and so forth, but live in a very different way. I mean, I often think about, you know, perhaps I trampled over a few people in those early years, and hopefully I did less of that as in the later years, that sort of thing.
I want to, we've just got a few more minutes, but I want to ask you why you're glad to follow Jesus. And I wonder if you could give us some flesh on that. What makes you, because so many people think, you know, follow Jesus and, you know, the whole world has gone gray. Whereas, chatting to you, I mean, we have prepared this interview. It may surprise you, but we have prepared this interview. I'm chatting to you before, you know, you're obviously really glad and it's turned your life into colour, as it were. So, Camilla, why are you really glad to be following Jesus?
Well, I think if you get to the point where you believe there is a God and that you can have a personal relationship with him through his son, Jesus Christ, then to not have that relationship with a creator God actually is more of a diminished life. I think actually, you know, the opposite. So how I was living before was more of a diminished life. Whereas once I came to know the living God and came to faith, actually that was living life to the full. And I think, I mean, it has a practical outworking in terms of understanding a bit more, I feel, about what this life's all about and how I should live it. And frankly, you know, inevitably I'm going to die and feeling I understand what's going to happen then. And that then gives a framework for living now. So I think, you know, we've found that, you know, that's helped us with all the decisions we've had to make about jobs and money and bringing up children and all of those sorts of things.
And what about you, Mark? I mean, I know life hasn't been kind of altogether straightforward.
Yeah, in one sense, there's that sort of that big picture of, you know, this is not it, and there's life after death to come, eternity, and, you know, with God, free of the pain and suffering and all the troubles of this life. And so once it's, you sort of look forward, this is not it. This is just a small sliver of the whole of life. And so, you know, there's a sort of life of death aspect. But just here and now, living with, as a Christian, following Jesus, it's a difficult time, certainly, and some actually very painful times. Career-wise and difficult times in the firm. And, you know, when you realize that you have the living God with you, you can pray to God. He's listening and he cares. He cares so much that he sent his son to come and die for me. He really is listening and he will answer your prayers, sometimes in a way that you don't expect, sometimes in a way you don't want. But he does listen and he does answer your prayers. And, you know, I can think of times where I was in a very difficult point where I literally could not come out of the house because I was just sort of really crushed by a couple of things. And I would just have to open the Bible and read the word and pray. And I had to do that absolutely rigorously and to ask for strength to carry on. And the Lord gave me the strength. I mean, it was as simple as that. I mean, it was miraculous, frankly, but that's how it works. And so, you know, there is a where you can go, and not just in the bad times, you can, you know, sing praise to God for all the great things that happen in life. But now I'm orientated correctly. And then you suddenly feel this makes a lot more sense of this life and what's to come.
Now, I'm going to be a bit naughtier because I can just imagine somebody thinking, oh, well, I knew. Really, Christianity is just a crutch for you, Mark, and, you know, you needed a crutch. I mean, what would you... forgive me for putting it like that because it's very cheeky, but, you know, somebody might easily say that. What would you say?
Well, you know, in some respects, I would say, well, I'll take that crutch, you know. I can get rid of that pride to say, yeah, I needed a crutch, right? I mean, you know, and maybe you do too. And so that's one thing I'd say. Secondly, I mean, you know, if this crutch is such that, you know, I am now right with God, all that I've done wrong in my life, and I've done plenty wrong, has now been forgiven because of what Christ has done, then I'll take that crutch, because I know I'm now right with God, and I know that, you know, when I have to meet God when I die, then I will know that I can say, I put my trust and faith in Jesus Christ, and he'll say, come in, come and live with me. Mm-hmm. And that's, so I'll take that crutch.
Thank you so much. Now, in a nutshell, we're going to close now, but in a nutshell, if you were sitting here and I said to you, which I'm going to, in a nutshell, you know, what is the Christian faith? I'm going to ask both of you. The microphone's with you, Mark, so you, I'm afraid, Camilla's got a bit of thinking time. But in a nutshell, what would you say?
The recognition that I'm not all good and that I've rejected God as a non-Christian, and knowing that I can do nothing about that myself. I cannot remedy that wrong. But Jesus Christ, God, remedies that right by sending his Son in the form of Jesus Christ, so that he can take the punishment of all that wrongdoing and all that rejection of God upon himself when he died on the cross. And so that if I put my faith and trust in him, then I am forgiven. And that is just, that wasn't quite a big nut, wasn't it?
A lawyer's
nut. Paid by the hour, yeah. That's right.
Camilla,
I agree with what he said.
Well done.
I mean, I think, you know, we've talked about the Christianity Explore course and things, and I think I would say, you know, look at Jesus, because there's so many confusing things or questions that you might have. And I think a lot of those can be solved as you look at Jesus. Who is he? Why did he come? What does he say about why he came? Which encompasses, you know, a lot of what Mark said, you know, why did he need to come? Because of the problem with our broken relationship with God and all those things. I would just say, you know, that's the heart of it, to start there.
Well, thank you both so much. I mean, it's just been very interesting to talk to you, and thanks for being prepared to say open, so honest. Let's give a big thanks to them, shall we? Thanks so much for coming to our evening, What If There's More To It, Life, What If There's More To It, and Life to the Full. It's been great to hear from Mark and Camilla. So is Steve Jobs right? You've got to find what you love. If you haven't found it yet, keep looking, don't settle. Now, what about Richard Branson, Virgin? You've got to follow your dream. Or David Brent of The Office, you grow up, you work for half a century, you get a golden handshake, you rest a couple of years, and then you're dead. A few years back, I was speaking at an event similar to this, and the subject was fear. And at the end of the talk, perhaps it was a bit cheeky, but I went and sat next to somebody, a young graduate just arriving in the city, and I asked the question, you know, what are you fearful of? And he replied, not fulfilling my potential. So with the proliferation of kind of life coaches and meaningfulness experts and purposefulness and empowerment, perhaps it's no surprise then that somebody like Wendy Seifert has produced her piece, this book, The Sunny Nihilist. And in short, these are my words, not hers. I've read the book, and this is kind of the summary. Life is quite simply meaningless. You are a fleck on the foam of the crest of purposeful and pointlessness. So just embrace the moment and enjoy the ride and surf the wave. Now, of course, Seifert is not new. Existentialism is as old as the houses. There's a whole book on it in the Bible, the book of Ecclesiastes, and of course, Timber and Timon in The Lion King, Hakuna Matata. I was speaking on this theme in Auckland in New Zealand, and it was the Faculty of Arts in the University of Auckland a few years back, and just before the talk, I was sitting right at the back in the lecture theatre at a table, and there carved in front of me on the table by some hapless art student was this sentence, do your own thing, follow your own voice. Now, is that really all there is to life? It won't surprise you to know that Jesus Christ has a great deal to say about life to the full. I've got a copy of John's Gospel. I'll ask you to take hold of one. You'll find there's some on the tables there. This is our gift to you. We'd love you to take one away with you. It won't surprise you to know that Jesus has a great deal to say about life to the full. So in this account of Jesus' life, we hear him saying, "Whoever drinks of the water that I will give will never be thirsty again." It's kind of Mark and Camilla's testimony, isn't it? And Jesus said, "If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink, and out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. Whoever comes to me shall never hunger. Whoever believes in me shall never thirst." Well, if I may, what I'd like to do is to take us to just a couple of sentences spoken by Jesus from this account of his life. It's on page 31, the top of the page there, if you'd be prepared to turn to it. And it's chapter 10 and sentences 10 and 11. And really, I've just got three points I want us to dwell on from these couple of sentences. The first is this, that Jesus is the good shepherd who gives life to the full life. And secondly, Jesus is the good shepherd who laid down his life for us, for given life. And third, Jesus is the good shepherd who rose from the grave and gives us eternal life, future life, full life, forgiven life, future life. Let me read the sentences 10 and 11 at the top of the page there. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. So here's the first point, full life. The reason Jesus gives life to the full is because Jesus connects us to the God who made us. And if I may put it like this, this kind of opens up a fourth dimension to life that makes sense of everything else and gives us life in this life to the full. And the image is a beautiful one, this picture of Jesus as the good shepherd. And you know, you don't need to be Jeremy Clarkson or to spend an hour a week watching and listening to Countryfile to understand the image. In the first century, sheep were kept at night communally. The village pen was out in the open, away from predators. The pen was barricaded with thorns, and there was just one gate. And at dawn, each shepherd would make their way to the pen. And such was the familiarity of the sheep that they actually recognized the shepherd's voice. And it's said that the shepherd recognized each one and could do it in the semi-darkness just by running his hand over their back. And they made their way out with the shepherd to good pasture. And Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd." It's a beautiful image. It speaks of intimacy. He knew his sheep. They knew the shepherd. It speaks of care. He watched over his flock. He kept them safe. He guarded them from danger. But in the first century, this image to the audience that Jesus was speaking to would have meant much, much more than that. You'll see he says, "I am the good shepherd." And do you know, "I am" is the name God uses for himself all the way through the Bible. So just on its own, Jesus taking that name for himself, "I am," is an extraordinary claim. It's a number of occasions where Jesus does that in this account, at least nine, and I can probably find one or two others as well. "I am the gate. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the bread of life. I am the resurrection." Again and again and again. Additionally, the term "good shepherd" is a word with a big backstory in the Bible. It's the title used for God's king and lord and ruler of all. God himself speaks of himself as the shepherd of his sheep. You may know Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd." And in the Old Testament, the first part of the Bible, God promises that he will step into this world, He will shepherd his people. He will give them life to the full, what we long for. Let me quote this promise. I myself will be the shepherd of my sheep. I will make them lie down. I will seek the lost. I will bring back the strayed. I will bind up the injured. I will strengthen the weak. Jesus steps center stage. I am the good shepherd. He's claiming divinity to be no less than God. He's claiming authenticity to be the one who is able to give life to the full. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life. He's claiming exclusivity. No other is able to give what he gives. He is claiming, Jesus Christ, that he and he alone can give life to the full because he and he alone has come down from God as God to lead his people. I am the good shepherd. Now, so far, we've just been thinking about this for kind of 6 minutes or so. But I would love you to do what Mark and Camilla have done and what hundreds and hundreds of others have done and look at the evidence for yourself. And actually, this account of the life of Jesus wouldn't be a bad place to start. Take it away and read a bit each day. See for yourself. Because Jesus is offering life in this world connected and directed by him, offering for us to walk through life in this world with him as our creator at our side, offering to be our guide, your friend, your guardian. Let me say, I've been a Christian now for over 40 years, and my experience is that there is not one area of my life in which my life has not been enriched, even in the tough times, through having Jesus as my good shepherd. There's a guy called Augustine, and he was around in the 4th and the 5th century, and he has this great phrase, "Thou hast made us for thyself. We are restless until we find our rest in thee." This sense of, there must be more. Can't just be Wendy Seifert. Eat, drink, and be merry. Can I try this as a picture? I've tried it once before. I kind of hope it works. I tried it out on somebody before a meeting. If I used it last time, I'll tell you what they said. But, you know, my father was kind of larger than life. He was just a great guy. He was very, very funny. He was always the kind of life and soul of any party. You know, in one sense, he was my best friend. I mean, he was just a great guy. And I don't know if this is your experience or not, but you know when there was a party, say it was a birthday party or something like that, and he wasn't there, it wasn't quite complete until he was there? Maybe that's not an experience. Anyway, I said to somebody here, you know, how does this work for you? And they said, you don't know my father. To which I replied, well, actually, I do know your father, and I shall tell him that's exactly what you said. In due course. Actually, I won't. So, Susanna, your secret is safe. Oh, sorry, it's safe. I've got a friend who scored the winning goal at the, you know, the big university match between Oxford and Cambridge. He scored the winning goal. There can't be, you know, if you're a kind of university footballer, there can't be better moments of that. Oxford won 1-0. And yet, Thierry says that night as he lay on his bed, he found himself thinking, is that it? Steve Harmison describes the moment he held the Ashes trophy aloft after winning back the Ashes. He found himself saying, now what? Robbie Williams, at the height of his fame, wrote his autobiography, Feel. You may have read it. It's a great kind of summer read. How does it feel to be Robbie Williams? We think it's amazing. With everything that he had, how does it feel to be Robbie Williams? His words, empty. So Jesus is the good shepherd. He connects us to God. He gives us full life. But also you can see, and it's only touched on here, and the whole of the rest of the account develops this, forgiven life. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And now I want to say this distinguishes Jesus Christ from all other wannabe leaders of the human race. He's speaking about his death on the cross. We haven't got a lot of time to go into it at this point. Suffice it to say that our failure to treat God as God and to treat God's other creatures as God's creatures should be treated leaves a vast gulf between us and God, an estranged relationship, shall we say. Damage has been done. There's been a fracture. Reconciliation is required. A friend of mine led his battalion in Helmand Province in the worst time of the Afghan war. They lost 22 soldiers. I interviewed him right here. And talking about this kind of side of one's life, he said, you know, William, every single one of us has a dark side to our lives that we really don't want anybody else to know about. And that's true for me, and I'm sure it's true for you, the dark side, where we've let God down, where we've let others down, and it casts a shadow over our relationship vertically with God and horizontally with others. And until restoration has happened, we're separated from God, and so we're kind of living life in the box without the Creator. Well, Mark and Camilla talked about that, didn't they? A kind of grayness. In fact, Jesus would have put it much more strongly. I mean, in the language of the Good Shepherd and the wolf, he would say, without our Creator, we are prey. But at the cross, Jesus, the Good Shepherd, went to his death to carry God's judgment at everything we've done wrong, the dark side. And when you think about it, it is an act of extraordinary love, courage, commitment, selflessness, integrity. Do you know, I've been looking at this for over 40 years, as I say, and the more you look at it, the more it blazes goodness and kindness. I am the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd lays down his life for the sheep, that God should enter into this world and deliberately go to his death so that you and I can be forgiven. He loves you that much, the Good Shepherd. I think that deals with one of the most pressing issues of our day, which is forgiveness. Especially now that nobody can forget. You know, with the internet, those things that we do, they're kind of so much more public and unforgettable because they can just be trawled up at any minute. And one of the great needs of our day, it seems to me, is a need for forgiveness. And the Good Shepherd came into the world to carry God's judgment so that we can be forgiven and reunited with our Creator so that we can have full life and forgiven life. It's a beautiful thing. Finally, future life. He rose from the grave, conquering death. He gives life to the full. I wanted to skip down the page there to sentences 12 through 16. Those verses, they talk about false shepherds. It's worth asking, isn't it? You know, every one of us follows something or somebody. Does that which you follow love like Jesus? Give life like Jesus? Now look at 17. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to take it, to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father. Jesus is speaking here about his resurrection, so that he not only opens up, if you like, the door to relationship with God, to enjoy life to the full with God in this age, but through his resurrection from the grave, he offers us life into an eternal age, which again, Mark and Camilla were talking about, opening the door to life beyond, friendship with God, eternity. Suffice it to say that the thing that distinguishes Jesus from all other wannabe shepherds is that he rises from the grave. Do you know, many have offered life, no other has conquered death. Many have offered meaning, no other has dealt with mortality. Many have promised hope, no other has delivered resurrection. Only Jesus has conquered death, never to die again. And if you will come to him, trust him, follow him, you will be forgiven and you'll be offered eternal life. Now, I can't call the kind of angst of, what is life all about, what I'd like to call it a restless dis-ease. And as you can imagine, thinking about this talk, I've thought a lot about the kind of restless dis-ease that seems to plague us when we don't have certainty of a full life and a forgiven life and a future life. I spoke on this passage back before Christmas, and as I was getting ready to speak on this passage, my uncle died. And I mean, like you, we've all been to so many more funerals than we ever would have wanted to. I think we've had 14 family members, church family, and neighbors die in the last 2 years. And you know what it's like when you're at a family funeral. My uncle was buried, and we were all standing around the grave. He was a lovely guy, and one of the kind of uncles who always takes an interest in what you're about, and so very much part of one's history. But at the end of the day, for all he was an insurance broker just here, actually, at Willis Faber. At the end of the day, he got 12 minutes of a eulogy, and then his coffin went into the ground. Is that it? My sister came up to me at that moment, and we had stood round a grave as a family 30 years previously when my grandfather was buried. And she reminded me that as my grandfather's coffin was lowered into the grave, that was the moment she determined to investigate the Christian faith. And she said to me, we were in North Essex rather than North Norfolk, she said to me, when we buried our grandfather, I found myself asking, surely there's more. She actually came here and did the Christianity Explore course, which is rather touching. She came here, and then I turned up a few years later, and I was known as Catherine's brother for years and years and years, a sort of second-part player. She was always more exciting than I am. But anyway, there we are. And in the course of the Christian Exploring Jesus, she discovered, yes, full life, forgiven life, future life. I am the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd lays down his life. He has authority to take it up. He does. There is hope for you beyond the grave if you will turn to follow him. You follow somebody, maybe yourself, maybe some hodgepodge of stuff passed down by your great-great-great-uncle Bulgaria, maybe some philosophy, some other idea. Have you got forgiveness? Have you got resurrection hope? Do you have full life? Jesus can offer you all three.